Hi, welcome back to Radio Wasteland, the best in anything, anywhere. I'm your host, Chauncey Hallworth. This is my co-host, Kara Kittrick. Kara,
hello.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing good.
Are you surviving the apocalyptic change from shutdown to reality?
I died weeks ago. My body is over there behind the bed. I'm astral projecting into this chair right now.
You're held by your responsibility to the will of the need of Radio Wasteland?
You know, it's not just the will of Radio Wasteland. It's my responsibility to the Republic or to just the listeners to bring you the depressing news. You know, I want people to feel bad after listening to us. I want them to feel bad about themselves and the world. I've made this my goal because I am insane. So, yeah.
Right then. Well, if that's the case, then, you know, spirit, I invoke thee. Got any news for us today?
I do. So, Quebec is on the verge of passing legislation that would require all communication between refugees and the Quebec government to take place in French after 6 months in order to, quote, foster integration. Critics are blasting this as unreasonable, given the long waiting lists for French language training and the general difficulty of learning new languages as an adult, saying it will prevent refugees from accessing much-needed government services.
Okay, so that sounds a lot like the American, like, you know, speak English or die or something like that.
It kind of is, but you know what? I think we Americans are better about that than they are in Quebec specifically. They're real weird about their French in Quebec. I think in part because it's a province of Canada where most people speak French. Granted, most people do speak English there too, but for most, almost everyone there speaks French, and for most it's their first language. And they're very, this is not the first sort of Quebec, we're all about doing everything in French, we have to protect our cultural heritage of speaking French kind of thing. I still think it's stupid, but...
Maybe it's not stupid, because, you know, look at it this way. The people coming into Quebec, they are, being threatened because of their language. They have to learn another language, but there is another group here dealing with the stereotypes, and I would say that's the French in general, because here's my problem... If a white dude said this, I'd be all, that dude's a total, And if an English-speaking white dude said
yeah,
this.
Yeah, these guys are definitely white.
Yeah. I would be all, like, that guy's a total jerk, man. That's lame. Total jerk. But if a French-speaking person says this, I'm all, yeah, that kind of makes sense.
See, I think that's kind of what they're counting on, because... I don't know. I think we in Americans often don't have the ability to recognize, like, European-style racism because right. In our schools we learn about American racism, and so we kind of just feel like Europe isn't racist when, like, they are so racist. And I know Canada's not in Europe, but, like...
They wish they were.
Right, they wish they were, and, like, Quebec, these are people who emigrated from France a long time ago, and they're still, like, real clingy to their sort of French Quebec sort of identity. Like, it's the same thing. It's the same thing as having Confederate flags on your truck and going around, you know, rah, rah, this is our land.
I don't know if it's quite the same, you know, but also I'll make the argument, I've wondered this about Europe, and because I think a lot of people have a hard time comprehending racism and culturalism, and, sure. You know, Europe is basically just a bunch of white people that hate each other.
Right, yeah, well, Europe has never had a civil rights movement the way we have in America, and really Canada kind of hasn't either. Uh-uh. Like, Canada has had its issues with the indigenous population, but mostly
in fact,
Canada
I would say has, that's why we're so rebellious, is basically the population of the United States, 1776. All the people who wanted to rebel, rebelled, stayed here, made babies. All the people who didn't, they went north.
Well, you yeah, kind of.
They're much more docile people up there.
Okay, I don't know if I can endorse that.
All right, I just made that up. I made that up.
It feels like, I don't know, it kind of feels like it, though, doesn't
See,
it?
That's
like
culturalist, it? Though, is my point.
So, I don't know where I'm going from this. Requiring people to learn French in 6 months, I think, is crazy.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're willing to pay for it, I think it's awesome. We should all have an education system that good, but making them do it, of course.
Yeah, because it's sort of like, and there's a lot of things that are unclear about how this law works, because there's a bunch of provisions about, like, you know, if life and limb are at risk, then it's fine. But it's like, why else would a refugee be contacting the Quebec government? Right? Like, they're not going to contact you because they need help moving their sofa, right? It's going to be something urgent no matter what. So it's like, there's a lot of weird stuff about this legislation, but it in general feels like just cultural, you know, grandstanding. We want everyone here to know French. Why? The rest of the country speaks English, and everyone there speaks English too.
Yeah, so, I can guarantee you their kids will know it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not like their kids are going to grow up, like, not speaking the local language, you know? I mean, granted, every once in a while somebody does, but it's not common.
No, it's not. And,
plus,
you know,
this is the problem with laws in general. You know, the problem with laws in general, you know, I have a hard time of saying, like, politically what side I'm on, because I believe in less laws. For one, I think when a law is passed, there shouldn't be sneaky other little laws slipped in. It should just be that law. And here's an example of a weird thing. Okay, we're going to make everybody speak English. No problem. What about those who can't speak? French. Right. What about those who can't speak at all? Okay, well, they're up in Quebec, you know, are they going to learn ASL or SEE sign language? You know, which one are they going to have to learn? You know, and, you know, there's a lot of variables. This guy knows French, but does he know it well enough? Did he pass the class? He didn't pass the class because he has learning disabilities that we haven't figured out yet, but we're going to send his butt home. You know, it's just, I believe in laws. Don't get me wrong. We need lots of laws. We need lots of stuff to make stuff happen, but I think we need to make sure that laws are all encompassing. And if they can't be, it's probably not a great place for a law.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's so many gray areas where it's not clear where this would work. And also, it's like, these guys are refugees, worth noting. Like, these are not economic immigrants. These are not people who are, like, came to Canada in search of a better life. They came there in search of, technically, a better life, any life. Like, in the sense of, yeah, because if they get sent home, they'll die.
I'll save you if...
Right, if you
learn French. If you can learn French in 6 months, starting...
Such a hoity-toity, like, do they also have to learn the harpsichord, you know?
Right. Yeah,
do they need to know Mozart's concertos? Like, as long as they're, like, contributing, you know, that's I think, the most...
You haven't found the fine line in between the frilliness levels of a classic shirt and some level of mockery, so...
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Your outfits have been called poserish and insufficiently punk. So
I'm sorry. When we cook it, we call it Hassenfeld.
God.
Radio Wasteland comes to you from the Reading studios of Free Fire Radio, 96.5 FM and AM 1460. Visit Radio Wasteland at Instagram at instagram.com/radiowasteland.
What do you got next?
All right, so a Business Insider article talking about a biohacker named Left Anonym caught my eye recently. They are a person who has personally implanted over 50 chips, antennae, and magnets into their body in an effort to become a cyborg. They carry out these operations on themselves without anesthetic and without any particular guarantee of safety, in order to share information about this process with their transhumanist internet peeps. They've stated, "I did it for kicks, I just wanted more senses." Their implants include a chip card reader and devices in their wrist and devices in their fingers that allow them to sense the distance between their hands and objects they touch. The article also reported on a ballerina in the same circles who implanted seismic sensors into her feet to allow her to detect earthquakes across the world. These actions don't go without risk. Several of Anonym's implants have caused infections and serious health problems. They insist on doing it anyway as a blueprint for future biohackers.
Okay, that is, I get transhumanism, you know,
Yeah.
But it's a broad term. It's a broad term, so I want to be careful about what I say. Because, you know, some people might feel that they fall under this blanket, you know, transgender people or even just, body modification people maybe feel like they fall under this.
Yeah.
But to the point where you're just sort of like rando cutting yourself open and shoving crap in there, that's a mental illness.
Yeah, I have mixed feelings on this. I think this guy is a complete weirdo.
Yeah,
and I think he's hurting himself.
Yeah, he's hurting inside, is what he is.
Yeah. Then again, I think, you know, everyone has the right to... If you're an adult, I think you should be able to modify your body as you see fit.
Oh, yeah, don't get me wrong. I'm opposed to a lot of stuff that shouldn't be. You know, just because I'm sitting here saying, that's stupid, doesn't mean it should be illegal.
Right. So, that said, I don't think this person is mentally ill either. I think they're very committed to, like, this.
You think it's an art form?
Well, no, I think they are maybe unhealthily committed to these very, like, sort of fringe political beliefs and the viability of transhumanism as, like, a thing. I think most transhumanists I talk to have extremely optimistic and inflated senses of, like, how soon neuromancer-ish technology is going to be here.
Oh, yeah, you know? We're nowhere near. I mean...
Yeah, no, we're not, but...
How cool is a chip reader in your wrist that you then have to go to a screen to read? It's not like he reads it and then his eyes light up and he goes, oh, well, we have access to their personal information. Engage!
Right. No, the practical value of any of this is incredibly dubious, and it's almost certainly, like, much, much worse for him.
Yeah, it's a party trick.
Yeah. No, it's a complete gimmick. And so it's like these people tend to think, well, this is the stepping stone to, you know, we'll all be cyborgs. I think it's more that they're trying to, like, normalize this in because they think the technology is a few decades away. It seems like it's more like a few centuries away.
Oh.
That's more what it seems like from just reading what AI people are saying and what, you know, people who study just, like, the brain are saying. You know, these are... I think people are much too sanguine about when we're going to have, you know, super cool bionic arms that are wired right into our nervous system, right?
Right. Like, in the case of the ballerina, so she has these things in her feet that can sense earthquakes around the planet. Oh my god, super cool. Okay, it is cool. But is she a cyborg? So let's say I have things in my feet that sense, this is a perfect example. I don't even have to come up with another. I have a thing in my pocket that can sense seismic vibration. Now, but if I were to surgically put this thing in my chest, but then still had to go to a mirror and unlock it and read it to see what the seismic vibrations were, am I really a cyborg, or am I really just kind of a wagon at that point that's dragging around the device that can't be removed from me? I don't think I'm a cyborg at that point. I think I'm just stuck to something.
I mean, I do want to clarify, it's not like with the sensors and with the stuff, this is a situation where they can just, like, by feel, determine sort of what's going on, because these devices, like, vibrate. They send sensations.
I do get that. That is interesting.
Yeah, it's cool. It's still completely impractical and dangerous. But I would say
hard to sleep, distracting. There's so many chemical things that you could be damaging just by being aware of the spinning of the Earth 24/7.
Right. I don't know. I'm hoping they have some way to like turn some of these guys off. Right.
Totally. Like, yeah, it's probably an app on their phone that they have to lose. Oh, luckily I have a tile on my phone though, so I just have to, you know, beat my ear and my tell me where my phone is so I could turn off my foot. Or maybe they have a switch on their foot, you know. But I did, you know, this does, as much as I'm making fun of this, I do get the scientific implication of it. I watched a show once where they were talking about how we would communicate with aliens. And that while humans have their senses, there are other senses on the planet, and it's very likely that we can meet another species that doesn't have speech, or that doesn't have sight, or that doesn't have hearing, or that doesn't have any of those, that just has other senses. And so they took these students in a class, and they blindfolded them and put ears on them, and they put, I think I told you this, they put a belt around their waist with... It was British, so they must have a different word. They referred to them as vibrators, but they were basically boxes that go around your waist, and whichever one is facing north vibrates. So while the people are blinded and deafened, they always know which point is north. So they took away two senses, but gave them another one, and then have them try to like navigate a maze, just through their ability to smell, touch, and know where north is.
And they, if I'm remembering, because I think I heard about this, if I'm remembering correctly, like, after enough time with these devices, like, they worked it out, and they could, they were pretty effective with them.
Yeah, well, they definitely started to learn to, you know, the first attempts were not pretty.
No.
But by their future attempts, they were navigating it pretty good, and they were changing the maze around, too, so.
Yeah.
You know, the skill level was actually growing as well.
In fact, I was listening to a podcast about this, and there have been a bunch of experiments kind of like this. At one point, there was also an experiment where people had these vests on that were basically the same thing, but they had sort of a constellation of different vibrating bits that were all connected to, like, basically the emotional moods of other people.
Right.
And basically, over time, they could learn to sort of understand what was going on just by, like, the different vibrations and sort of understand what was going on with this different person just because their brains sort of subconsciously learned to interpret what the vest was doing. And then there was another guy who wore this vest for a while and basically hooked it up to an AI that combs social media for, like, certain keywords just about what's going on in the world. And so this vest became just sort of a, like, vibe detector for the entire world.
Oh, that'd be interesting, especially if you could tie it into a local bubble. Like, you know, I want to set this to you know, GPS isn't great, but I can set it to a 10-mile radius or something.
Right.
So you're picking up social cues from your 10-mile radius.
Yeah. So there is some interesting stuff like that, but again, not necessary to do home surgery on yourself. Mm.
Especially you know, your ballerina on your feet.
Exactly. Although I will say, if you're worried about people hurting themselves, just doing ballet.
Oh, yeah, totally. My cousin's
probably way more harmful than implanting stuff into your body. So people already hurt themselves.
My cousin's toes are gross. They're all
right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's super funny. I don't know. You know, we got to move on through this, but I got to throw one last thing in here, and that is this technology, when they find a use for it and it's effective, you won't have to normalize it, and you won't have to sell it. You didn't have to sell your phone.
Right.
You didn't have to sell glasses. You put value on this technology, and people stick it on their bodies. You don't have to normalize it.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Reading Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
Axiom Repertory Theater wants to thank the Rancheria for their generous grant to help support the arts and our theater in the community. Thank you so much for being a wonderful partner.
Hey, from all of us at Riddick Sports Club, we want to thank Reading Rancheria for all that you guys do for the community and for helping us out. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Reading Rancheria, proud to play our part.
I'm celebrating local heroes. Tune in the second Thursday each month at 6.05 p.m. right after the news for Heroes of the North State on North State Now. I'm Michelle Slade. During North State Now, we will speak with your neighbors, friends, family, and community members who give back, not to be recognized, but because it's the right thing to do. During these conversations, we will learn what truly makes our community and the people in it. Join me the second Thursday of each month at 6.05 p.m., right after the news, for Heroes of the North State on North State Now.
At Shasta Regional Medical Center, we're specialists in emergency care with the experience and training to deliver expert diagnosis and treatment to all emergency patients. Shasta Regional Medical Center is certified as an advanced primary stroke facility and is one of the nation's 50 top cardiovascular hospitals and is a fully accredited chest pain center. In an emergency when every minute has meaning and every second counts, choose Shasta Regional Medical Center, your choice for emergency care. Shasta Regional Medical Center, caring for our community when minutes matter.
The tradition continues at the Dry Creek Station at 22025 Highway 299 East in Bella Vista, featuring delicious steaks and seafood, chicken, soups, salads, and much more. The Dry Creek Station, family-owned and operated, open since 1992, serving dinner Tuesday through Sunday from 5 to 9 p.m., with happy hour from 3 to 5, and don't miss their fantastic weekend specials. The Dry Creek Station at 22025 Highway 299 East in Bella Vista. So come on down to the Dry Creek Station, where quality and value meet.
You're listening to Chauncey and Kara on Radio Wasteland right here on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. That's Free Fire Radio. And don't forget to follow Radio Wasteland on Facebook at facebook.com/radiowasteland.us.
What you got next?
Okay, so there's this John Hopkins University study going viral, ironically enough, showing that lockdowns were ineffective at preventing COVID deaths. Now, this flies in the face of basically all accepted practice in epidemiology and the understanding of most scientists and most public policy. So what's going on? What's the deal with the study? It turns out that the study in question was A, not peer-reviewed, B, not affiliated with the COVID Research Center at Johns Hopkins, as one would assume, but rather with the Krieger School of Arts and Sciences at Johns Hopkins, and C, was not drafted by epidemiologists, but by three economists, one of whom spends a lot of his time on Twitter comparing mask-wearing to fascism. The actual paper has been roundly criticized for a bunch of things, such as defining lockdown as any public policy intervention, such as mask wearing or requiring people to self-isolate, presenting itself as a meta-analysis of other studies, but cherry-picking only studies that don't use particular statistical models, which limits it to only a handful of the least rigorous papers out there. And finally, one of the authors of the paper is the publisher of the journal that it was published in, which is kind of a conflict of interest. Nevertheless, this study has been reported on in social media and a huge number of news outlets without any discussion of these various glaring issues.
Okay, so this seems to be like a bit of an issue.
Right. This is why people don't trust science.
Well, okay. So let me put this out there for the listener. I'm very liberal. I'm incredibly socially liberal. I believe in the science community. I believe these things. But if I find out that Dr. Fauci basically did this all for capitalist oligarchs to make more money, I think we should build some gallows and hang it, you know. So it's not like I'm opposed to these sorts of things, but what I just don't get the motivation, you know. I don't get the motivation. I don't get why everybody is so excited to see the world fall apart. Everybody's just looking for it, looking for a way for the world to fall apart. It's like they find comfort and normality in the fact that the world could fall apart at any minute. And I think in global health, I mean, I want to know these people who come down on global health and say, oh, this isn't right, this isn't right. Which it might not be, don't get me wrong. I'm not so arrogant that I think it's all right. But tell me a situation in which you would find a system where we would believe in world health, because we need to do that.
Okay, I'm confused.
I don't know. I'm just very frustrated with this whole, like, fascist, you know, just a mere fact of blaming, equating masks to Nazi fascism and
right.
Stuff. I don't even understand even slightly any of it. And all this deal is doing is we're publishing a peer review. It's a hot point button. It didn't have, I mean, non-peer reviewed. We're publishing this article because it's a hot point button and not because it adds anything. We have added this to the conversation solely because it takes things away.
Right.
You know, and that's the problem. People love it. People love it. Oh my God, we might die tomorrow. Ooh, it's so fun. It's like weird. It's so weird. I'm sorry. I know I'm speaking like abstract rambling at this point because I can't even put into words how weird I think it is. Say some stuff. Distract me.
No, I mean, I think I get what you're saying, because like, how often does a scientific study go viral, right? It goes viral when it says something that's very surprising and very enraging to like a particular subset of people. And that's what this is. But the thing is, usually when studies are surprising, it's because they're bad studies, right?
Right.
You know, our science doesn't work that quickly. Sometimes when studies are surprising, those are the most important studies that ever get produced, because they upturn everything and they show us a new way and that leads to new breakthroughs. But most of the time, it's just because it's a bad study.
Right.
And that's why everyone's criticizing it. So there's a number of issues with the methodology here. This guy like, the series of the journal that it was published in, the guy was just like, I'm going to publish my own rant in this, in my own journal, and basically just pretend it's science. But I don't care about any of that. That stuff happens all the time, honestly. What is annoying is the fact that so many outlets have just kind of ran with it and say, hey, here's a study that says lockdowns were worthless, right? And that's all people hear, and people who are just like, trust the science, trust the science, trust the science, they're like, oh, that's what the study says, that's true, you know? And this is my problem with the whole thing, and sort of why I brought it up, is just because we tell people to trust the science, but they don't know how to trust the science.
Right. Science is a process, not an answer.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And they don't – I'm going to say something kind of – maybe it's controversial. I don't know or not, but like
– Are you about to say you hate black people? Because you're starting to scare me, Kara.
Oh, God. No, I'm just going to say –
I'm just getting you back. You did the same thing to me last week.
I did. Yeah, I did. It's true. No, look, I just think they should be restricted to certain parts of the world. No, oh, God.
Yeah, separate equal.
But, no, what I was going to say is I don't think, like, trust the science is a particularly useful mantra for people, because I don't think...
Not if you don't know what the word science means.
Well, I don't think trust the scientific process is very useful either, because A, most people's understanding of the scientific process is bad, and B, like, people aren't doing their own research. So it doesn't matter if they trust the process or not. They're not engaging in the process. Frankly, I say trust the scientists.
Yeah, trust the scientific results. You know, if you don't understand the process, don't read about the process.
Well, because there are a lot of results out there that are, you know, wrong or meaningless or this or that. Like, any given study, you know, may or may not.
Again, what I meant by the results, but you're right. You know, there's a lot of semantics wrapped up in there. Again, what I meant by the results was peer studied, reproduced, all done. Here's the stuff. We've done hundreds of these. We're adding to this. It's a collective volume of knowledge.
Right, exactly.
And now we're getting somewhere with, you know, here's the work. Here's what we put into the volume that we're pretty confident about. Trust this volume. You know, it's like, but again, you're totally right. I mean, that was a bunch of semantics in order to even get that concept across. Yet we live in a world with less and less vocabulary. Basically, everybody's just all, oh, look at the new words added to the dictionary every year. But how many are taken out or at least never used again?
Yeah. And I think part of it is also just like, let's say there is a huge body of evidence behind something. It is hugely difficult to, like, as a lay person, assure yourself of that and, like, determine whether the evidence behind something is, in fact, good. Determine whether there are all these studies. I would say as a lay person, your best bet is just trying to figure out what the people who are in a field think and just going with that, you know? And I think that's very, very unsatisfying to hear, because I'm basically just saying blindly follow the experts. You're not smart enough to figure it out.
Right.
Which is not a very good message, but I think it's kind of the best approach.
Right. Well, this comes back to something I've said 1,000 times, so I won't explain it deeply, but one man is not capable of knowing all the earth sciences. So what you need to do is know you're not capable.
Yeah.
You're just not capable. You could dedicate your life to virology if you want to. I mean, you're capable in that regard, but you would sacrifice, you know, your job and your family and all those other things that you pay attention to. So people are just,
if you want to be a virologist, go and be a virologist, but like,
people are just super arrogant, you know, especially it's my generation and beyond, because Generation X and on, because all of our parents told us that we were just wonderful. And like my mom, you know, I'm just all, I want to be a historian. She's all, honey, you already are. You just need to grow up to be. And I'm like, yay, I'm everything, you know, and then I grow up and I'm all, I'm nothing.
I mean,
so many participation trophies.
Millennials got that treatment too, believe me.
Oh, no, yeah. It started in my generation and it just kind of went on.
Oh, okay. I thought you were saying yours and previously, but no.
I
get what you're saying.
What we need is a participation trophy for failure. What we need is all of us to understand, hey, you participated. You weren't smart enough, just like the rest of us, so you get this trophy. Or you failed and you have to get up and try again, so you get this trophy. Those were the trophies I needed.
Are you saying you want passive-aggressive participation trophies?
Yeah.
Are you saying that will fix this nation's problems?
Yeah. So I can look at my shelf and be like,
shot, man.
But it doesn't matter there. Absolutely. All right. You got any more news for us?
That's what I've got.
All right. Well, you are listening to Radio Wasteland, and, come on back.
Proves your best sleep is vital to your mental, emotional, and physical health. The Sleep Number 360 smart bed senses your movements and automatically adjusts to help keep you both effortlessly comfortable. And it's temperature balancing, so you stay cool. So you're at your best for yourself and those you care about most. Life-changing sleep, only from Sleep Number. Don't miss our weekend special. The Queen Sleep Number 360 C2 smart bed is only $9.99, plus free home delivery when you add a base. Ends Monday. To learn more, go to sleepnumber.com.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
100 years ago, Simpson University began with the promise to be the gateway to world service. 30 years ago, we moved to Reading with the promise to serve the North State, graduating professionals who live and serve our growing community. Building on our foundational promise to educate ministers and missionaries, Simpson University now offers over 20 degree programs. Learn more about Reading's hometown university at simpsonu.edu.
You're listening to Free Fire Radio, 96.5 FM, 1460 AM. You're listening to Radio Wasteland with Chauncey and Kara. Find all our shows and archives by visiting Radio Wasteland at radiowasteland.us.
All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland. Kara, tell me about some mythology.
Yeah, so I got a weird one. I've been saving this. I wasn't sure whether to talk about it. I wasn't sure whether the world was ready, but I think it's time. I think we need to talk about the Butter Cat.
The Butter what?
So, the Butter Cat.
Okay.
So it's a Scandinavian myth that got loaned to France, Wales, a bunch of places in Europe, and it's basically just a magical cat that was believed to protect the household butter and milk from evil goblins and do household chores in exchange for a place by the fire. Finnish builders, sometimes even to this day, always leave a shovel full of ashes after erecting a new house as a gift for the Butter Cat. There are other versions of the myth where the Butter Cat is a form of witchcraft, a creature made from a ball of yarn or sack of nails, and you make the creature through magic, and you send it out with the intent of stealing butter and milk from one's neighbors. And in Eastern Europe, there are stories of witches who turn themselves into cats in order to steal the milk and butter from other homes in the area. People have been killed for this.
Did you just say people have been killed for this?
Yeah. Like during the witch trials and stuff, people died.
Okay. Yeah. Last week, 15 people were killed after being accused of being butter.
It has not been reason. Well, God, I don't know. It hasn't been in the news.
And what? Okay, so they leave it a shovel of ash as
yes,
a gift?
Because cats like to leave their remains in ashes.
Oh, okay. Like litter. Gotcha.
Yeah, like as cat litter.
Right, and then you could also make it out of yarn and nails?
A ball of yarn or a sack of nails.
Okay. Because in my head, I was picturing a ball of yarn with, like, fingernails in it. And, like, oh, God. I just thought, that's gross.
Yeah, maybe, like, iron nails. Just
right.
Like a spiky ball of yarn. I don't know.
Yeah, whoa, crazy. You know, I really like this one. I feel that my house needs a butter cat. You know, one thing I was thinking is that it started out so benign.
Sure, yeah.
It's so nice, but by the time it worked its way across, it makes me wonder about this whole Dracula thing, because by the time it made it to Eastern Europe, they're like, I'll kill the butter cat, you know, and it's like, I'll summon the butter cat to take my neighbor's butter. You know, initially it was all like, but I know we give it a place to, you know, keep bugs off.
Right,
the
friendly
butter,
household
know?
Spirit.
And so, you know, these nice, heartwarming people said, oh, we're moving to Eastern Europe. It'll be so nice. And they build their house there and people are, what's this? And you're all, that's a butter cat. And they're, oh, you're trying to steal our butter. Kill him. You know, it's like, humans
you know,
are just terrible.
I think Romania might be like that. I think there might just be a deep Gothic vein in just rural Romania, but where all the myths know it's like we have to make it edgier. It's like the 90s in comics.
Right.
You know, when
oh, God.
everyone had pouches on their uniforms and were committing war crimes.
Right,
like,
right.
It's that, but it's a place and it's Romania and it's.
You know, it's the same uniform, only with short hair and a vest.
Right,
yeah,
exactly.
Right, yeah. Oh, God. Yeah, but no, this is a cool one. This is a really cool one. It's fun, and it's cute, and it might as well be I might get the name wrong, but it might as well be its own Hiro Miyazaki movie.
Right, or I think Hayao Miyazaki.
I am Miyazaki, you know, the Butter Cat sounds like a movie that I'd get by him and I'd be, oh, this is the best thing I've ever seen in my life, you know.
It does kind of have Totoro vibes, right? Because in My Neighbor Totoro, all these creatures are just like sort of woodland spirits and stuff. And it's kind of similar to that. And in fact, there is a version of this myth in Japan, although it's very, very different. It's probably not even the same myth. It's probably just vague veneration of household cats, like protecting from evil spirits. But it's a similar sort of idea. People have ascribed supernatural powers to cats for forever.
I have a cat, and it has passed some sort of spell across my house. We are enamored with this thing. We all just basically, me, my wife, and my daughter that lives with us, I have two other kids, but only one lives with us, and we basically, I don't know if we'd have a relationship at this point if we weren't talking about the cat. That's all we talk about, you know?
Haven't you, had have you seen the cat? Like,
have you seen what the cat's up to? Hey, look at the cat. It's like, that's all we do.
Haven't you had the cat for like a year now?
Yeah, about that. And he was a fire cat. He was like burned out of homes and stuff like that. He was all burnt and had to heal up. He was going to possibly lose an eye, and he didn't. And he didn't come when we called him Kitty. So he didn't respond to it. And then we learned that the fire areas where he came from was like a lot of migrant farm workers and stuff like that. And I'm not kidding. If you call to him in the Spanish for calling to a cat, I forget what it was, for the first couple of months, he totally responded to you and came running up to you. So I think he was from one of these Spanish-speaking families, because we'd say Kitty and he'd be all over. Wouldn't even look at you. And then we'd say the other word.
Like gato.
At this point, and he'd come walking over to you. Holy crap, my cat speaks Spanish. My dog's a Chihuahua. Not a word of Spanish. But my cat, well, he knows it.
Well, do you think your cat would have responded to French after 6 months?
Yeah, well, he better.
he's out. We're just going back in the fire.
Yeah, no rescue for you. All right, you are listening to Radio Wasteland. You know, I know you had fun, so come back next time.